Good morning, and welcome to the We've Been Everywhere speaker series. Today, our speaker began his time at Western Kentucky University in 1990 and has been manuscript and folklife archives coordinator at the Kentucky Library since 2007. He obtained a master's degree in history from Stephen F. Austin State University and his MLS from University of Maryland College Park. An active researcher, he has published numerous articles and monographs that encompass a wide range of Kentucky historical interests. Currently, he's working on the JFK Memory Project at WKU, an effort to commemorate the 1960 Bowling Green campaign visit and 1963 assassination of John F. Kennedy, and I think he has some information for you about that afterwards. Today, his topic, however, is on a more local scale, grave houses in Kentucky, very appropriate for 2 weeks before Halloween. Please welcome Mr. Jonathan Jeffrey.
Well, I'm likely to forget this JFK thing at the end, so let me just put in a plug here. I know some of you are not old enough to have a memory of JFK's visit here in 1960 or his death in 1963, but I can tell some of you are, and so if you would participate in this, we would really appreciate it. We have had some good responses from alumni. An email went out to alumni from the time period, and they are responding, including sending some photographs, because some of the students were there for the Herald, and they were taking photographs. We've had some bunting that was off of the grandstand donated, because somebody came down and tore a big piece of it off right before it was taken down. Some campaign buttons, and then we've also done some interviews with people who were intimately involved in the logistics of the day. So it's really an exciting project, and I'm hoping that as we get closer to the anniversary, we're going to step it up and there's going to be even more remembrances added to that collection. I just felt like it was really important this time, this signal anniversary, because if we wait till the 75th anniversary, everybody's going to be gone that remembers. So I thought it was important that we do that this time, and an occasion where there'd be a lot of people coming together remembering it, and there'd be a lot of press about it. And some of you have already seen it. Almost every magazine that I picked up that's for November has an article about the assassination and how it changed television, how it changed PR. It's really a fascinating thing. We want to have a part of that here at WKU also. Well, I briefly want to tell you how I got into this project, because some of you have been around long enough to know that sometimes research projects just fall in your lap. I had a call from a young lady who was getting her PhD at the University of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg. And we had had a graduate student from our folk studies program go there and work on his doctorate in American Studies. And so he said, when she mentioned the topic of grave houses, why don't you call Jonathan Jeffrey at the Folklife Archives at Western and see if they have any information about this. So she called me and said she wanted to come down the next week with her mom, and did I know where any grave houses were? Well, I happened to know where a few were only because of a collection that we had from Vernon White, who was a retired faculty member here who went out into cemeteries all over Kentucky and Tennessee. And so I said, I can take you to one, but most of them are further east. And she said, well, that's fine. And I said, I could give you a map of how to get there. Her mom and she came down. They drove during the night, and they got here a little bit after noon. And I said, well, I don't get off until 4 o'clock. And so I took her to a grave house in Monroe County. It's the closest one to us, in Flippin, of all places. And showed it to her, and I was fascinated by seeing that one. And so I had never been on Facebook. I swore I'd never get on Facebook. But then I got on it. I just loved it. And so I had gone out this day and did something that I'd thought most people had never done before, visit a grave house. And so I just put it online, you know, and took a couple of pictures of it. And one of my friends was Virginia Carter, who was, at that time, the director for the Kentucky Humanities Council. And she said, this is fascinating. She's an anthropologist. She says, this is fascinating. I've never heard of a grave house. So she said, why don't you write up an article for the Kentucky Humanities Magazine? So I did, and I had taken pictures, of course, and they published the article, and they even used one of my pictures on, and I'm not a very good photographer, but they used one of the pictures on the front of the cover. Well, that was great. Then about 6 months later, the National Endowment for the Humanities did a little, in their little curio section, something about the grave houses, and I thought it was interesting. First of all, they called me a folklorist, which I'm not. But then they had some really interesting little comments to make here that I had to take to heart. It said, other states have a few remaining grave houses too, but many of Kentucky's have been especially well maintained and have been recorded for posterity by Bowling Green's peripatetic Jonathan Jeffrey. Now, let me just ask you, how many of you know what peripatetic means? Now, I know y'all are smart people.
Wandering.
Okay, well, I had to really go back and read this because the first time I read it, I thought it said, these grave houses have been recorded for posterity by Bowling Green's pathetic Jonathan Jeffrey. But then I looked up peripatetic and saw, you know, that was not necessarily a bad thing. So you never know when a research project will just drop in your lap. I never intended to do this. I've always been interested in cemeteries. It shouldn't be unusual that librarians would like cemeteries. You know, everything's in order. Everything's got call numbers on it. So I've always liked cemeteries from the very beginning. I don't know how many of you have ever read the Kentucky writer James Still, but he's definitely a stylist, very simple. Many times his characters don't even have names. They're just mother, father, children, and so on. Well, in his book, A River of Earth, a grieving mother insistently instructs her husband, you ought to be nailing together a little grave covering for the baby's grave. And shortly afterward, he said, father fetched walnut planks from the loft, and a grave house was built under the barn shed. It was 5 feet square with a chestnut shingle roof. And during the first lull in the weather, we took it to the point, which is where the cemetery was located, and placed it on the baby's grave. Steele recorded the grave house's construction as if it were a common folkway among mountaineers of the early 20th century. In reality, the building of such structures was not an automatic reaction to death. Let's see if I can do this. I've got a few grave houses in here that are not in Kentucky. I think maybe you can tell that one is in eastern Kentucky. Even though it's quite simple, it still has a little bit of an artistic effect with the lattice work in the gable. I love the fact that, you know, one of the reasons for the grave houses is to keep water off of the grave, that they actually even included gutters on this little building when the roof line there on that side probably is only about 2 feet from the ground, but they still wanted to have a gutter. I will say these are a little bit derelict on this one. And this particular grave house I included only because it's the finest one I've ever seen. Of course, it's in Texas. And it is for a Kentuckian. But this is Albert Sidney Johnston's grave house in the Texas State Cemetery in Austin, Texas. It's all cast iron except for the zinc shingles on the roof. As you can imagine, cast iron is very brittle. It falls apart. So after 117 years, it was starting to deteriorate and actually falling apart. They took it completely apart and rebuilt it and preserved it for posterity's sake. But these odd cultural vestiges are now quite rare, but examples can still be found across the Commonwealth. Although most common in the Upland South, grave houses can be found in a large swath of the United States, from Maine, south to Florida, and then west to Texas, including particularly all of the Deep South. You also find examples in Michigan and Wisconsin, and these have to do with the American Indians. And as you know, now we refer to that as the Mara Indian tradition. We don't say American Indians or Native Americans anymore. It's the Mara Indian tradition. And then you find some of them in Washington and Oregon, again, related to the Mara Indian influence in that area. Grave houses are built directly over graves. And I think sometimes the best way to define something is to tell you what it isn't. And so these are some grave forms that you're familiar with that is not a grave house. The one on the top left is a mausoleum, and those are built specifically so that you can be interred above ground. A lot of people have phobias about being buried under the ground. I don't know why, because you're dead, but they have a phobia about it. They don't want worms or anything like that getting in. So in these, you usually have niches, and one this size, there's usually four niches two on either side, so one person's buried above the other. These are quite common, although I don't think you'll see a lot of them in the future. The reason is they are horribly expensive. I don't know how many of you have seen the newer Milton mausoleum that's been built in St. Joseph's Cemetery here, but that mausoleum costs around $200,000. So it's not something that most people can afford today. The one on the right, although I don't think you can really tell, it is built into a hillside. That is a crypt. And that still allows you to not be buried in the dirt, but there is dirt over the crypt itself. So they're usually in the side of a hill, and you have niches on either side, just like in a mausoleum. The only big difference is you're covered with dirt. The building itself is covered with dirt. And then the other crypt that you're more familiar with are the crypts underneath churches, generally down in the cellar, but you can also be buried in the walls of churches too. As a matter of fact, in St. Joe, the first priest is actually buried underneath the altar of the church there. And then the one other thing that it's not, and you'll see these a lot in Kentucky, it's not a boxed grave. And that's what you see over here on the left. We have boxed graves down in Pioneer Cemetery here. They are just limestone, generally limestone boxes that are above ground. You're not buried in the box. You're buried underneath the ground. This is just a kind of a grave protector. And they were quite common from the 1850s to the 1870s, especially here in Kentucky. But you'll hear these grave houses referred to as all types of names, including spirit houses, soul houses, grave sheds, decoration sheds, lattice huts. And I think you can see from this slide why they might call some of them lattice huts or grave huts. No matter the name, their origin is still rather nebulous. There are antecedents that exist over in Britain and in Ireland, and some anthropologists, you know, trace the development of them from there. But they also combine that Amerindian influence with that Irish and British influence. And this is why we have a native adaptations of them. They're different from the ones that you would find on the British Isles. I want to point this one out right here, only because it's a little odd, isn't it? Up on stilts. It is on stilts for a very practical reason. Anybody want to guess?
There's other graves underneath it.
Okay, she's saying there's graves underneath. There are absolutely. Under almost every grave house, there's going to be graves underneath them for sure. Oh, somebody guessed it right off. It's for mowing. They don't have to worry about moving anything to get the mower underneath the site. I will tell you, that is one of the reasons for grave houses. A lot of people do not want grass on graves. The further south you go from us here, you'll find more and more what we call skinned graves. They're either concrete or they're gravel, or somebody goes and actually skins them or takes a hoe and cleans all the plant life off of the graves. This is not an uncommon thing, especially further south from us. You're also going to see most of these are in the mountainous region of the state, so to find one on stilts or to find one that has an area where something could actually get up under it is not uncommon. Well, for the past few years, I've examined approximately 100 grave houses in different parts of Kentucky. Now, the furthest west I saw one was Callaway County, which is where Murray is located. That one was very unusual for one to be that far west, and then eastward to Harlan County, and then up to Robertson County up on the river. They are not in our metropolitan areas. You don't find them in Louisville or Lexington, any of those places. The greatest majority of these architectural oddities are found in the Commonwealth's mountainous regions, starting at Wayne County, which is Monticello, and then east. Most of them are very simple frame construction. And this one is in Wayne County, and it's not that different, but it does have the tombstones outside of the grave house. You'll see the tombstone usually is inside and helps protect the monument itself, but in this case it's outside, and this one has been rebuilt. The form is the same, but they covered it with aluminum siding, and they've replaced the roof on it. This is also pretty typical inside. Again, no plants. You don't want any plants growing inside your grave house. The number one reason is because they could grow and then destroy part of the grave house. You get a tree growing in there, eventually it will grow. But you'll find them skinned like this, and then they will mound the graves, and they will do this periodically If the graves settle down and they're flat, they will mound them back up. It's just really common. You'll see that in some of the other slides. And it also gives people opportunity to put flowers in there. They're not going to fade because they're covered by the roofs too. And you'll find other mementos, particularly chalk figurines, concrete figures that people put inside these. You also notice there's no entrance into this one. You actually have to climb over the side to get into this one. That's not the most typical form. This is more typical of what you'll find in a rural cemetery. And of course, these grave houses were built most of the time to keep the weather off of the grave, whether snow or rain, but also to keep burrowing animals out of the gravesite. And I know we don't think of that today, but we still have burrowing animals, of course, like groundhogs and things like that. But in the day that many of these went up, we still had a lot of free-range hogs in Kentucky. And hogs will burrow down into graves. And there are horrible accounts after the Battle of Perryville of the hogs going in and eating the bodies, and how nobody wanted to eat any pork, you know, around Perryville for several years because of that. It's not uncommon. There was a, particularly in the Appalachian area, there was a fictional character that was a combination of an anteater and a weasel that was called the grave robber. And even though he was fictional, you know, a lot of them would, you know, guarantee the veracity of this character. And he supposedly went down into the graves and destroyed the body. And so this was another way of trying to keep a character like that out of the gravesite itself. Now, this is the grave house that I took that young lady to in Flippin, Kentucky, over in Monroe County. It's in a beautiful cemetery. I think you can tell it's on a big hill. You often find cemeteries, especially in Kentucky, on hills. A lot of people will tell you that there's a religious connotation there, that you're closer to heaven. But in reality, I think you would find most of the time it's because it's not arable land, usually. It's not land that's good for farming. And usually it's a little bit rockier, so it's not unusual to find cemeteries on hills. This particular grave house for Augustine Neal was built in the 1880s, but look at it. And this is the original one. It's still in fairly good condition. All of the palings on the side are original. They still have the little square nails in them, the older nails. The roof has been replaced once, but they keep it painted. And the reason this one is in such good shape, I believe, is its construction. This is one solid slab of limestone on this side, and then you've got one on the back, on all four sides. It goes into the ground about 6 inches here, so it's very solid. It's not going to shift around a lot. And then, I know some of you can't see this very well, but right here in the corner post, of each corner post, there is a metal pin that then goes down into a hole in the limestone. What that allows to happen is the wood never touches that stone. And so naturally, in columns and on the front of people's houses, the water accumulates around the bottom, begins to rot from the bottom almost always. And so in this case, they've got it off of the ground or off of that limestone slab around there. That keeps it from deteriorating. So 120 years later, the family told me that stone's never been cleaned. And look at it. It's just pristine. 120 years old. This is in Clinton County. This is what we call a open grave house, and that just means the walls on the sides go halfway up. They don't go all the way to the eaves. If they go all the way to the eaves, it's a closed grave house. Most of these have a door. Some of them have a window. If it's a closed grave house, there's almost always one window. This one, there was no need for a window because it didn't go all the way up to the top. However, that has been closed off. Once that was open, so air would circulate in there, they have now put plexiglass over that, so you can see in, but you can't get in. And then at the front of the grave house, what might look like a door, most of us could not get through. It's about 9 inches wide, and it has a very thin tombstone in it with one of the little ceramic medallions with a photograph of the child that's buried there. And that's a theme that you'll see over and over again. These are sometimes referred to as posthumous displays of affection. And so it wouldn't be surprising that a number of these would be for children. And as we go through, you'll see some of the stories seem to all revolve around children. They've also put plexiglass over the front of that gravestone there, again, so birds can't get in, nothing can destroy anything inside. And then you see the door on the back. So you can get in, you can place figurines, you can visit. It's not uncommon for people to go inside these. And anybody who's gone through a death knows that there's a period where this type of mourning, actually talking out loud to someone, is not uncommon. Some of the ones in Louisiana are so large that when they have Decoration Day and Memorial Day and things like that, people actually go in and have picnics inside of the grave houses. The ones in Kentucky are not that large. This is one also in Clinton County for the Butler family. Now, it's a closed grave house. So you notice the sides go all the way up to the eaves. It does have a window in the back. And then you notice the door is not really a door. It's sort of a gate that allows entrance into the grave house itself. You see some other Butler family members buried around this. Again, this is for children. And then occasionally, and this is the only one I found in Kentucky, but the original grave houses in Britain and Ireland are all made out of stone like this. So this could be a tradition that was brought over. This is from the 1880s also. The one on the right was built first, and the one on the left second. You notice the one on the left is already beginning to tilt. And one of the reasons was the construction. And I know you can't tell this, but if you go and see it, you'll notice that this tombstone, the grave house is actually built around it so that it sits into the grave house itself. This one is flush with the front of the grave house. It just wasn't as well built. And subsequently, it is sinking down into the grave on that side. Also, because this is sedimentary stone, it spalls, you know, when you have ice or something like that, and little pieces of it pop off. So you see pieces of it sliding off. Still, 140 years later, it's still in recognizable shape. You can tell what it is. This is in Laurel County, right outside of London. And this is just to show you the different forms. Almost all of the grave houses in Kentucky have gable roofs, you know, where the triangles in the front. But we have two examples of pyramid-shaped roofs. They're both in Wayne County, which means they probably were built by the same person. And then this one is in Muhlenberg County, another one that's close to us, with a shed roof. And you can see where at one time there was a gate right here. Somebody does go in and mound that one, because when I went, you know, they were freshly mounded. And occasionally, and this is a real typical thing in Kentucky, in this area, and you found it here, they had placed some shells on the grave site, not on the tombstones, but actually on the graves themselves. And then this, now you're getting over into the mountains now. And because they're all on hills, sometimes you can see that you're building right into a hillside there. The one unusual thing about this one is, one, it's large. There are six graves underneath. But then they built this display case for their silk flower arrangements. And again, there's a little bit of an eave over it so that it doesn't get exposed to the sun as much, and the flowers last longer. They don't discolor immediately. And then somebody in Letcher County spent a lot of money on this grave house. This reminds me more of a picnic pavilion than a grave house, but that's exactly what it is. And look, they even put in indoor-outdoor carpet. And really, there's no reason at all for this cupola. You know, you've got open sides. There's no reason for air circulation. But they included that decorative element just because they wanted something extra special for their family. Now, I don't know, you know, when you're there, I guess you kind of look at them from a tilt, but it would not be uncommon in these mountain cemeteries to find grave houses that are built like this. This is a really fancy one, though. And this is the furthest north I found one, in Robertson County. This is one that, despite its age, it was put up in 1881, is probably never going to fall down. People are not going to be able to vandalize it like they have so many of the others, because what looks like wood paling on the sides is actually slats of cast iron. So this is very heavy, and it's not going to move. The grave has been damaged slightly. You may notice on the left-hand corner up at the top, there's a little piece of it that's come off. That might have been the reason that they built the grave house, is that damage took place and they decided we're going to put a grave house over it. I couldn't tell you that for sure, but it makes sense to me. Because how would that have gotten damaged otherwise after a grave house had been built over it? These are sort of like mushrooms in a way. You know, if you find one mushroom, usually there's a bunch of other ones around it. And most of the time when you find a grave house, there's going to be more than one in that cemetery because they're continuing traditions that have happened in that area for years. And again, this is that a cemetery, the first slide that I showed you with the derelict gutters. This is the same cemetery, and you see there are derelict gutters on most of the other ones also. So they were just keeping in style. But you see now how close down to the ground most of them actually are. You don't find, most of them are about hip level. And this is the ones I found furthest west in Murray County. This is for the Purdom family, three different members at three different times. The one on the far right is the newest one. I think you can tell from the condition of the shingles. This one was built in the 1930s. The other ones are right around the turn of the century. Now, I thought, I haven't found any more like this that far west. And I thought, I just got to believe these people are not from here. And sure enough, I got in the census and looked the Purdom family up, and they're from Letcher County. So they had migrated to the Murray area and had carried this tradition on with them. This is just different forms that you see. The one on the bottom is really unusual, though, and it says something about our time. This is a relatively new one. It's built in the 1990s. And a husband and a wife. The husband's already buried there. The wife is planning to be buried there. But look over here. What in my era, and on a farm, that would remind me of a well house. That's actually a grave house for a pet. Unbelievable. I had never even considered that or thought about that. But they included that as part of their mourning, you know, for that pet. Okay, this is the largest grave house in Kentucky. It's for the Lee family, which is over in Wolf County. And the Cox family. It's right on the border of Lee and Wolf County. I had a difficult time finding this. I don't know how many of y'all have been to Wolf County. How many of y'all have ever been to Wolf County? One person, see? It's a very isolated area. It's very mountainous. I've missed it several times. I actually had to get a farmer off of his tractor to explain what I was doing. And once I mentioned it, he knew exactly where it was and got me to it. As you can see, it's rather large now, but it has an interesting history. Four children are buried here. Moses, Sarah, Woodrow, and Lila May. They all died before they reached the age of 19. Now, this house features plywood siding, a tin roof, green all-weather carpet inside, folding chairs inside for you to visit, and other mementos that were left by family members. Now, I will tell you, historians rarely get fan mail. Rarely. But I got an email one day, this was back in last year, and it said, I'm attaching my story of how the Cox Gravehouse came to be. So she had seen this article in the Kentucky Humanities magazine because it's placed in state parks. She had stayed at one of the state parks and saw it, and lo and behold, her family's grave house was in the article. She said, my mother is still living. That would have been one of the children that lived. And she is 92 years old. I knew my grandparents and spent many years as a child learning how to make crepe paper flowers to decorate the graves in the little house. My mother was thrilled to see the magazine article, blah, blah, blah. But then she included a typescript of a Courier Journal article that's undated. But from reading it, it seems to be from the 40s. Okay? I'm going to read part of it because I think it tells you a little bit about why this family wanted to do this for their children. On a hilltop, hard by a deep canyon formed by the swiftly flowing waters of Walker's Creek in Wolf County, is a little mountain cemetery. In the graveyard stands a rough plank cabin. Okay, that doesn't look like what I showed you, does it? Okay. Which is, in that community at least, has become a symbol of the undying love and devotion only a mother can hold for her children. It was on a hot summer day some 30 years ago, so back in the teens, that little 9-year-old Grover Cox, the firstborn of Mr. and Mrs. Mose Cox, lay dying. As his mother hovered over him, he told her that he didn't mind dying so much, except that the sun would be so hot out on the hill where he would have to lie. In an hour or so, the child passed on, but the hot sun he feared never touched his head. For at the same time he was buried, a tiny house was erected over his grave. A few years later, another little boy was taken from the Cox family. He was buried beside his brother, and the small house built over the first grave was removed, and a larger one built to cover them both. Then in the succeeding years, two more died, and the house was enlarged to cover all four of the graves. On the headstone of each grave, Mrs. Cox has placed an oil-tinted photograph, which is not really true. It's one of those ceramic medallions on the front of the grave, and then covered them with artificial flowers. And then it goes on to mention that every birthday for each child, she brings little figurines and places out in the grave house. Now, unfortunately, it's been vandalized any number of times, a lot of the stuff broken or taken, but there are still a few remaining items there, including this framed a group of the florist cards that were delivered when Lila May passed away. And it says Neon Friend. That might not make any sense immediately, but Neon Fleming is a community over in that area. So these were friends from her school, the Neon School. It was fascinating to go there and then to actually have some contact with the family. You just never know. So as I mentioned earlier, this is in the same cemetery. These are not technically grave houses. These would be called grave covers. But this is for Big Andy Spencer, who this cemetery is named after, and his family. As I mentioned, it's not unusual that you would have many of these related to children and the deaths of children. And so this particular one is in the Floyd County's Justice Cemetery, where Catherine Justice was laid to rest in February of 1958. After tragically drowning in cold water with 26 other children in a school bus that plunged off the bluff into the Big Sandy River. And they have erected this monument there for the people who died. And you can see it's right on the bluff because the river's right down here. The family built a closed grave house, which you see on the left-hand side, because they, as the newspaper said, did not want her to ever get wet again. Sad. Interestingly, when her mother died 4 years later, the family extended that shed roof off of the left-hand side so that her grave also could be protected from the elements. Grave houses once more frequently pepper the cultural landscape of Kentucky's mountainous regions. Their demise can be linked to several factors. As the structures deteriorated and as professional funeral homes became more commonplace, appearance-conscious kinfolk or cemetery caretakers often dismantled the older grave houses, particularly as they deteriorated. In addition, municipal cemeteries and many cemetery associations, usually related to churches, classify the grave houses as obstructions and prohibit their erection. And the big reason is they don't want to have to mow around it, honestly. Constructing grave houses waned by the 1960s, but new ones, some as recent as the 1990s, like these, continue to be built. Occasionally, a new grave house will be constructed to replace one that has deteriorated, and this is in the Skaggs Creek Baptist Church Cemetery in Monroe County. There was a grave house here originally. I think you can tell this is a new one. It deteriorated. The family took it down. The only problem when they reconstruct these is they're never made out of the same material, and they're generally never in the same form as the original. So that original, unless they took photographs of it, there's no evidence of it anymore. And generally, you're going to find only one per cemetery because so many have been taken down over the years. The rare exception is this cemetery, the Carter Cemetery over in Wayne County, that has eight of these. Now, this is in a very isolated area. It's not near a road, not anywhere near a road. You have to climb over a fence, which means you have to get the homeowners or the landowner's permission to get to the cemetery. And that's probably the reason these have not been vandalized anyway. Now, they are deteriorating simply because of time and the elements. And so you see pieces of the roof have flown off at different places. They've tried to repair them occasionally. But even in this isolated cemetery, I think you can see they tried to do some really nice things architecturally. You know, they continued this scallop under the eave line. They had each of these in a house. This would be an added expense to have what they call a return eave. You know, generally they just come down flat. but they have a return boxed eave on these. So, and look at the pitch. The pitch on these is higher than most that you've seen. They really took a lot of effort in these, and so I'm thankful that these are still there. These are in the same cemetery. Again, they're fairly well constructed. You know, you see the piers are stone, and then the wood is just sitting on it. But again, you can see the condition on the left-hand side. And I want to end here, and I wanted to end specifically with these because, you know, I could go in and say, you know, our museum might be interested in having a grave house as a cultural vestige, you know, from the past. Or I could say, you know, I know some people in the folk studies department at Western that would probably be really interested in coming in and help preserve these, you know, try to, you know, fix them up. And the problem with that is these belong to the family. They were built by the family, for the family, and you don't go into Eastern Kentucky telling people that you're going to come in and do something for them and for their family, something that they should be taking care of. So my purpose in making presentations in particular is to try to create an awareness that these are, you know, I can find only 100 of them left. And I mean, I still continue to look. People give me clues every once in a while, but I don't think there are very many more than that. And so if we wait another 50 years, there may only be 10, or because you look at the condition of these. So my hope is that the family would get interested, because I'm interested and other people are interested, that they would get interested in preserving at least a few of these, maybe picking the ones that are in the best condition and or the ones that had the most association with the family, and taking care of it and maintaining it for the future. And I'll be glad to try to answer any questions. It's, you know, it's never meant to be a presentation about zombies or any kind of thing. Like, it really is a cultural vestige that we're losing, honestly. Yes.
When they pile up, do they bring dirt? How do they?
Oh, when they mound them.
Yeah.
Generally, there's, you know, these are in isolated areas. They'll just go to the perimeter of the cemetery, and maybe there's a little mound hill or something like that. Okay. They'll just dig some up there and bring it in.
The shells and the graves, is that
to prevent
erosion?
No, you know, in this area, that is it's not an uncommon thing, especially in Edmondson County and Muhlenberg County. It was a tradition that they brought from the Deep South, and it was sort of a symbol of good luck, you know, and happy trails kind of thing to you.
Our last speaker, Jack Montgomery, spoke about putting shells on graves, and it was part of his hoodoo.
Oh, now I can guarantee you that probably would not have been the case in these areas, not at all. Did you have a question?
Well, you know, these are on in a combination of cemeteries, then, on private property. Or
Yeah, like these are all on private property.
Is that can you erect graves in Kentucky on? There's no regulation of where a grave.
You can bury somebody on your house. Now, if you're in a, there may be regulations locally, like in Bowling Green. I don't think, do you know, Sue Lynn? I think by code you would not be allowed to bury someone, you know, on your property. But outside in the county, and I won't give any names, but I know personally people recently who've been buried on their own property.
And this is a problem every time you do developments. You hear about, you've got all these graves to deal with, and can you move them? Can you not move them?
Right. And boy, that's really happened in our county.
Yeah.
And even what you hear about, there are others that we don't hear about. Unfortunately, I could tell you one right now that's on the Corvette Museum's new place where they're putting the big park. You know, there's a cemetery there that they're going to have to deal with. That they're not. Nothing's in the paper about it or anything. But I'm telling you now. yes, sir.
Is it a rural phenomena over in Ireland and England, or is it, how different is the situation for these grave houses?
Okay, in grave houses in Ireland and England, you would not see any built like after the 1800s, or the mid-1800s. They just didn't build them. They were expensive, first of all. You had to hire a stonemason usually to build them. They still exist there because of the older ones, but there are a lot of, and there that I'm sure deteriorated or vandalized or whatever too, that we'll never even know about, you know, prior to photographs and all that. Maybe in somebody's diary or something they might mention them. The ones here, are really totally different. That the one stone one that I showed you would be typical of what you might find over in England or Ireland. And sometimes they're not even cut stone, like the one that we saw, it's all cut stone. They would have just been a house with mortar built out of just, you know, uncut stone, round stones, whatever they could find, but they felt like it would last. And of course, you got to remember in that area too, they did a lot of dry stacking with no mortar. As a matter of fact, that's where our tradition of dry stack fences comes from, is Ireland and Britain. So a lot of those were susceptible to a cow coming along and rubbing up against it and just pushing that over, making it look just like a pile of rocks after a while.
Well, thank you, John.
You're welcome.
And thank you all for coming. We have...